This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. The Center for Closing the Health Gap is launching a widespread awareness campaign to point out why people in some communities have poorer health and shorter life expectancies. Joining me to talk about it are Closing the Health Gap founder and president, Dwight Tillery, and executive director, Renee Mahaffey-Harris. We'd like to hear from you, too. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or email us, talk@wvxu.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Well, your organization has been around for a while. Tell us what it is you're really trying to point out with this new awareness campaign.
Well, several years ago, it came to my attention that there was really a huge disparity for certain minority populations in terms of health, longevity versus the majority population. And there it's a very multi-layer problem, but it's something that we all can join in and improve. Certainly, the minority populations that bear the burden of sickness and premature death shouldn't be that way, that we should focus towards what is the term that's being used today, health equity, and that is that everyone should have an equal opportunity to be healthy in this nation. And so that's what we want to do. We want to get the message out. We've been around for about 10 years. We certainly have had the ability to impact some of the community, but we still feel that community at large still need to be aware of this disparity. And that's something as a society we can do something about, as well as the individuals.
Renee?
So as Dwight has shared, inequities affect the populations that are most vulnerable in our communities. And this campaign will not only give attention to the issue, but also help really turn people towards some of the solutions. And those solutions are really meeting people where they are and really engaging them and equipping them with the tools to be a part of their health solutions, as well as looking at some of the barriers that they don't directly control, such as, you know, social determinants of health are the factors of from education to work to where you live affects your health. And we hope that this campaign will really shed the light and build greater awareness throughout our entire community on what we can collectively do to change the conditions that cause the minority populations in particular to have to bear the burden of sickness and premature death.
Some people do see this issue as a social justice issue, and that as a society, we need to focus on that because it's unfair, it's unjust simply because of one's ethnicity or race that they should bear the burden more than anybody else, particularly when many of the illnesses and premature deaths are preventable. And so we think it's a very worthy cause.
Well, who are you trying to make aware here? Who's your target audience? Are you trying to let the community in general know there's a problem? Are you trying to target the people that are in the middle of it to let them know, but gosh, you may want to take some? Who are you targeting?
Well, our target are stakeholders who are part of helping kind of change the conditions in this overall community. So that would be policymakers, that would be educators, that would be corporate citizenry, that'd be community-based organizations, really
government.
Getting in the government to really understand the role that they can play in the solution. And then the other audience is the very people who are living in conditions and who are vulnerable in our community. But primarily, it's the people who can be a part of the solution.
And it's very important for everyone to understand because the illnesses, the premature deaths, really impacts our nation. Health disparities or health equity is really a national problem and got really focused on in 1985 by Secretary Heckler of Health and Human Services. She said for almost a century we've collected data and we've seen this huge disparity that certain minorities, African Americans, Latinos, and white Appalachians, have really borne the burden of sickness and premature death. And that there, as a country, we should do something about it because it does impact us. For example, as we begin in the next 20 to 30 years, we know that there won't be a majority population or white population that has been the majority since the beginning, that actually the majority will be made of many minority groups. These groups come to the workplace, come to the educational system, et cetera, having a greater risk of sickness. For instance, corporations. Corporations want people healthy so they can be productive. They don't have to pay high premiums, be able to bring that down, and really impact the cost of the nation. For example, health disparities has been determined by the Urban League, National Urban League, and Johns Hopkins. It's costing all of us, no matter what color or what walk of life, about $60 billion a year. So there are many incentives why we need to address this problem in earnest.
What can be done? Is it when you talk about diabetes and high blood pressure, I think those are some of the big problems in some of these communities. Is it just a matter of getting better health care, making it accessible? Is it a matter of teaching people better how to take care of themselves? Where do you start?
It's the latter, is what you said. It's really educating and giving people the tools. Healthcare in and of itself, when you kind of look at health, 20% of it is medical care. The rest, the other 80%, is where you work, live, and play. So it's the factors that you can control. It's your lifestyle. And so it means teaching people the simple things they can do and meeting them exactly where they are. Not waiting to see if a building is going to be built or a fitness facility is going to be built in your neighborhood, but what you can do at home with your children or to really change your lifestyles so that you have improved behaviors that ultimately will improve the health outcomes for you.
What are some of the things? I mean, what do you suggest to people that they do? I mean, do you work with people specifically?
Or yes. Is your,
what do you tell them?
For instance, learning how to read a food label, understanding what you're eating, what's going into your body, and if, in fact, you're going to continue to eat those things, what impact that they're going to have on your health over time, and also what potentially you can do. Maybe you don't have a membership to a gym, but you can walk around the block. Maybe you don't have a grocery store in your neighborhood, but what can you do collectively to work with other people in the community, be it sharing rides to the store and learning and sharing healthier recipes and learning how to use a crock pot so you can extend and really more affordably eat healthy.
Do you find people are receptive to that?
Oh, yes, very much so. I thought perhaps Renee would talk about obesity, which is really our disease of focus. There are probably about 10 diseases where you will see these disparities, and you can name them. I always say, you name the diseases, and African Americans, we've got the problem. So we've been focusing for the last 10 years on obesity, and as we know, it's an epidemic in this nation. So as we began to, we have programs and where we work in specific neighborhoods to begin to teach people and get them to be aware and help them to overcome the obstacles. There are many obstacles, and the city has been a great partner, and so have the four major hospitals have been very, very important in terms of working with us to get the message out and to help people to begin to improve. Maybe Renee might want to give you a specific example of how TriHealth has helped us in terms of the faith-based community.
Yes. Over a three-year period, we recruited individuals from about 15 churches over 3 years. They each received, over a five-month period of time, the physical activity instruction and nutrition instruction, as well as motivational learning so that they could maintain those lifestyle behaviors. And over that five-month period of time, over those 3 years, there were 14 churches that showed a 95% lifestyle change. And one of the things that they all shared at the conclusion was, which was really amazing to me, was I didn't realize there was something I could do about my health. And even after the first month, just learning to reduce salt intake and seeing what impact that had on their body, it was just amazing to see their faces, to see that small bit of information and knowledge, how that ultimately began to change their health behavior and affected, frankly, if they were pre-diabetic or pre-hypertensive. The whole effort was really about challenging them to look at their overall health and have improved health outcomes over that five-month period of time. So it was just really incredible to see their reaction. And I was a little shocked to hear people say, I didn't realize there was something I could do about my health.
Well, I think for many
many of us, you know, you read it in the magazines and it's on TV, but you get that sort of the bombardment of you got to eat better and you got to get your exercise and all these sorts of things. And whether you choose to do that or not, or whether you make that work, it's a whole different story. But what you're saying in some of these communities, they're just not even aware that is a possibility.
Exactly.
That's correct. Or to even understand how they measure up with society as a whole. There are many people who just believe that, you know, Big Mama had diabetes, so what's the big deal? You know, it's the generation curse, so to speak, and a willingness to accept it. Hypertension runs in my family, et cetera, et cetera. And so making people aware that there's something they can do to deal with those issues. And they're not only issues of individual, but it's also of society, because the conditions where people live, and many poor people live in some of very difficult circumstances. Food Trust came to town and it's been working with the city on getting more grocery stores in the Cincinnati area. What happens when the grocery stores move out, people don't have a place to shop to get fresh fruits and vegetables. We know that that's really important in terms of addressing obesity. If you're just drinking pop, going to the corner store, buying candy, potato chips and pretzels, or fast foods, we know that that's only going to make your health worse. So educating people and helping them to show alternatives, helping them to get involved in their community, to call on government, the local, state, as well as federal, to help balance the health playing field, if you will, all becomes very important. And what we see is that people are really very excited about the idea that they can. Who wants to be sick? Who wants to suffer? Who wants to die prematurely? Nobody does. But if we can help people understand that it doesn't have to be that way, then we can show a real difference for them and a real promising future for them.
We're talking with Closing the Help Gap founder and President Dwight Tillery and Executive Director Renee Mahaffey-Harris about an awareness campaign that they are working on right now to let people know about ways they can improve their health. If you have a question or a comment, let us know at 513-419-7100, 513-419-7100. Email us talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. The whole food desert idea, I think, is one that a lot of people aren't aware of. So many people just go to the store and the food's there, and you don't really think about whether or not you have produce or fresh, all sorts of fresh fruits and vegetables that you can purchase. NPR did a story not long ago, though, but they said there sometimes also is a problem when they do bring those stores into communities because the people that live there don't really know what to do with some of the food. I mean, there comes a mango and a pomegranate, and they're not sure I still have trouble with the pomegranate. What do you do with it? Is there also education going on about not only what to buy and what to eat, but how to prepare it?
Yes. They actually go hand in hand. So it's not just build it and they will come and they're going to buy healthy food. It's teaching people how to cook those healthy food items, how to shop affordably for those healthy food items. And they really go hand in hand. An example, we have what are called Do Right Healthy Corner Stores. So while it'll take some time to get grocery stores in some of the food desert sites, there are corner stores on every corner. We have been replicating a model from the Food Trust in Philadelphia, where we are working with the store owner and working with the residents in the community and other community-based organizations to, you know, bring nutrition tables into the store, bring in fruits and vegetables and other produce items, but teach individuals in the store how to prepare that healthier food item, and also sharing knowledge about healthier food items and how oftentimes you hear it costs more to eat healthy. Well, with preparation and planning, but we have to teach that. And so the education is a critical component of improving the health along with access.
Yeah, I think you have to think about it in terms of conditioning and habit. So, you know, if you grow up in an environment where that's all you eat is fast foods, White Castle, McDonald's, and so forth, the idea of having a salad, eating broccoli, and so forth, can be rather foreign to people who, in many instances, due to no fault of their own, have been left to eat those particular items. So now you bring a new grocery store in and say, listen, we've got cantaloupes, we've got apples, we got zucchini and a variety of other things. That takes some transitioning to begin to get people to eat differently. I remember the first garden we started in 2005. I always like to say before the first lady had her garden. We had a garden right there next to Melrose Y. And young kids in the summer program were very much involved. And so at the end of the summer, we had a harvest. And we had a lot of vegetables and for the young people. And it was amazing to watch how they enjoyed eating those vegetables. One kid, he was big guy, strapping guy, and he was eating raw carrots. And I said, do you like that? He says, yes, this is good. So much is about the conditioning of communities and what they're left to. And so what we know in terms of the data that far too many minority populations are really in pretty deplorable conditions, and that impacts their health. So we want to open up the opportunity to have them to be able to make better choices and make those choices available. I think that's the other part of society. We're fortunate to have the current mayor, who is very much an advocate of the work that we're doing, John Cranley. But it's important to not just focus on downtown and making sure that people who live downtown have all the great amenities, but people throughout the other communities in our city have an opportunity to live and work and play and be healthy.
513-419-7100 is our number if you have a question or a comment. Paula from Germantown called and said, crockpot cooking was mentioned. What healthy food can you make in a crockpot versus meats and salty soups and those sorts of things? What do you
We actually have a recipe of healthy menus or healthy dishes that you could make in a crockpot. And I think it's actually on our website. And if it's not, I'll make sure it gets up there. It's about 50 recipes that we actually trained individuals in the community. We provided them crockpots, and then we brought the materials in and showed them a variety of types of soups where you could reduce the sodium or use alternatives. It's really important that we are teaching how to eat healthier, and it can be done. So, yes, there are recipes that you can cook in a crock pot that are healthier. Yes, there are.
You talked about the young man that was so happy eating a raw carrot and eating some vegetables that they had grown in the garden there. Are you finding, are the younger people more receptive? Are the older people more receptive? Is there, some people have been eating some of those same foods that their mom or their grandma's cooked for so many years. And I know if I ate all the foods my grandma and grandparents cooked over the years, some of that stuff, wasn't healthy. the soup with the grease on the top, they said, eat that grease, it's good for you. I remember that. And my mom's going, no, we're going to strain the grease off. How does that go depending on the generations?
Well, actually what I think, just like the safety seatbelts, I think kids can influence the decisions that their parents are making. And we actually have a Do Right campaign, a Do Right Kids program, and we have family nights. And in those family nights, the kids are actually teaching back what they're taught about. And so we have parents come up and say, well, my child is not going to eat, we'll use carrots as an example. And then the child's up there saying, hey, I love this. And they had no idea. But it's really going to start with, I think the kids really can change the future of how we eat and actually saying to their parents that, we want something different. And even teaching the kids how to make healthier foods. Unfortunately, many households have working parents. Not unfortunately, but fortunately, they are working, mm-hmm. right? But the kids are preparing some meals because sometimes their parents are working a number of shifts. And so if we can teach kids now how to prepare healthier meals, then that's going to change a generation because the New England Journal of Medicine has now said for the fourth year that this is going to be the first generation to not outlive their parents. So we really have a crisis on hand as it relates to obesity issues in our communities. And so
that's
all kids. It's not just African-American kids or minority groups. But as Dwight said earlier, the inequities and the reason for this campaign is that there is a disproportionate impact of those disease factors to minority populations. And so that means we have to teach each other. We have to inform and equip even the policymakers and other decision makers on the role that they can play in improving the condition.
But you've raised an important question. Reminds me of that old saying, it's it's difficult to teach old dogs new tricks. So to use an analogy, and I include myself as an old person now. You know, because people have been conditioned to eating certain things, and to begin to get them to understand the connection between what they eat and how they feel is part of our educational process. Somebody said that food was the original medicine. And I think that if we could help people to understand that if they want to feel better, they have to eat better and they have to move better. We're excited about Interact for Health Foundation is leading now on healthy eating and healthy physical activities. We think that's the right direction for the entire society. We've become so sedentary. You know, we've got remote this and remote that and everything. We don't move. And so I think it's important for the entire community, this region, you know, to move. As a nation, if the top 50 industrial nations, we're number one in spending. But in terms of health outcomes, we're in the bottom third. So we spend more money than the other 49 industrial countries in the world, and yet we're not getting a return on our money. So we have to look at what's going on in our society and how we're living, working, and playing.
Jeannie's calling from downtown. Hi, Jeannie. What's your question?
I have a question. I was wondering if, with y'all trying to get out into the community and teach better eating and health, people who are recipient of food stamps, I was wondering, like, why doesn't the government have, like, some kind of program where if you're offering recipients food stamps, they can go out and buy food. Okay, that might solve the problem. Okay, I have money to buy food. I'm not hungry. But it might fall into that line of, the person doesn't know about eating good, so they're just on that same track of buying processed box foods. Is there some kind of program that the government might be looking into of trying to teach people, if you're a recipient of food stamps, like if there's some kind of class you would go through to learn about nutrition so you are able to, like, teach your kids how to eat better?
Well, Renee was talking a little bit about that. You said there are some things available now.
We have classes that we teach in the community, and we welcome you to visit our website or to call us at 585-9872 so that you could learn how you can participate. But as far as the government offering those classes, I'm not aware of that. Does it mean that it doesn't happen? But you raise a very important point to the caller that there has to be greater access to those healthier options to learn how to eat healthy. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we've done is create what we call our nutrition train the trainer, so we can train individuals in the community to be really a part of the army of people who are equipped to train another person about eating healthier.
But there are some other organizations, because we collaborate with everyone,
right?
Because your health doesn't exist in a vacuum. So Nutrition Council, YMCA, there are a number of other entities that are offering classes. Yeah.
Jeannie, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it.
Great.
And thank you for being here today. We certainly appreciate it. And we have lots of links on our website to other information and information about your programs. And you said you're going to get those recipes up on the web if they aren't there. So we'll look for those as well. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
I've been talking with Closing the Health Gap founder and president Dwight Tillery and executive director Renee Mahaffey-Harris. Cincinnati Edition is produced by Pete Reitmeier. Today's technical director was Rick Andres. Our engineering staff is Don Danko, Bill Dean, and Mike Makinich. We also had help today from Kevin Reynolds. Archives of our program are available on our website, wvxu.org. I'm Marianne Zalesnik.